Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Monday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. We were just on with you yesterday, Real Red tip-off show down in the rail yard ahead of Nebraska-Illinois. Huskers won it 75-60. Danny Burke was all over that. We have plenty of college football to talk. The CFP is out. No Ohio State, no Central Florida. Are you irate, or are you okay with it? Maybe you're a closet Georgia fan. Come out of the closet. It's all right. Georgia's a good football team. We'll discuss it all the next couple of hours. We are loaded up. We will talk recruiting with Greg Smith of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Big time get out of the state of Alabama for Nebraska football, off the edge, defensive end. So we'll get to that. We'll hear from Jay Moore in about an hour and 20 minutes on the college football playoff. His old buddy Zach Taylor, where he may end up in the NFL, and some other news and notes around football with Jay. Jay had a chance to check out the film of Nebraska's newest commit, and Jay will give his thorough breakdown and thoughts on that. I think it's a good thing for Nebraska. Give me more SEC kids. How's that sound? I think that's a great idea. You can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865 on Twitter. Give us a follow at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, or give Hail Varsity a follow for sure at Hail Varsity. Jamin Graham is the one we're talking about, who committed, 6'6", 220-pound beast off the edge. We'll see where he ends up for the Big Red. We'll talk to Charlie McBride, Mr. Blackshirt Charlie McBride, coming up on Hour 2 at 5:05. So, you have the decision that has been made, and that is where your attention is turned to for college football. We'll hear from Nick Saban. We'll hear from what's going on around the college football world. Notre Dame is in. Really good piece by Bill Bender, friend of the show, on what's going on with Ohio State. First, I just got this email. I don't know whether to laugh or whether to cry, but it's something to talk about that's coming up to Pinnacle Bank Arena. So, what's going on? We have a pair per day, starting the 17th. That's coming up here shortly. And when we're on the road for the Real Red tip-off show, you can qualify there. New Kids on the Block tickets. Danny just kind of puts that bottom lip over his top lip and nods. That was before your time. It's before your sister's time. I don't know how much your folks checked out. The New Kids on the Block, Danny Burke. But you're not eligible, but someone you know could be eligible. So we'll have a chance to get folks locked in for New Kids on the Block tickets here in the short future. Holiday Hail Mary's around the corner. Okay, they just went ADD there. Forgive me. Here is Reese Davis. Here is Mr. Mullins. Here is the group of three. We're talking about Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia. Here's the reason OU got in. Here's the reason Georgia ended up in front of Ohio State. I have my own theory, but here's the committee chair.
In the end, what we decided was amongst the group of three, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Ohio State, that, you know, the committee voted that it was not, no one was unequivocally better than the other. So then we leaned on the protocol. And as we leaned on the protocol, and you know what those are, you know, we're looking at head-to-heads, conference champions, strength of schedule, and results against common opponents. The vote came out that Oklahoma was 4, Georgia was 5, and Ohio State was 6.
Okay, so you look at that with Georgia now. they're the one that didn't have a conference champion, but they did have the strongest strength of schedule, at least according to the metrics that I've looked at. Does that indicate that strength of schedule can trump conference championships?
Well, we look at all of them. And in this instance, the conference champion, when one team wasn't unequivocally better than the other, we went to the protocol. And on this one, the one-loss conference champion carried the day.
Okay. The one-loss conference champion carried the day. If that's what you're going to go with, if you're going to eliminate Georgia because they're 11-2, they lost after leading by double digits against the greatest thing since sliced bread in Alabama. Only because Jalen Hurts is a man and a great teammate did Alabama come back and win that. Okay? So we're talking extraordinary, unique circumstance when the rest of the world is losing quarterbacks in droves. The transfer, once they lose their spot, they take their ball and go home. Again, a tip of the cap to Saban for recruiting the right type of kid. So you're going to say, okay, Georgia, you have two losses, you're out. You got beat by 20 by LSU. Had LSU not fallen to A&M and LSU's a 10-2 team or an 11-2 team with a bowl win, then I think you could keep Georgia in. The way they lost was bad. We whiffed on that game. At least I whiffed on that game. Thinking Georgia was just too much. Was that a home or a road? They got beat at LSU, didn't they?
Yeah. They got destroyed at LSU.
Right. I mean, it was. We're like, how did LSU put up that many points, and how did Georgia get held to be that few a point?
That's the thing. You can't lose that game. This was Georgia's playoff game, virtually playing Alabama, and you can't blow that lead. I mean, that was your chance. You knew that going in. While they might be more deserving than some of the teams, that's just the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you're going to go with conference champion, as good as Oklahoma is, as good as Murray is, as good as their offense is, as nice as revenge was in Jerry World, God, you're going to punch me for saying this. The better conference is not even arguable that it's the Big Ten over the Big 12. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go with a one-loss conference champion, you take Ohio State, not Oklahoma. Can we argue about Oklahoma beating Ohio State? Yeah. Can we argue about Ohio State beating Oklahoma? Sure. Over the body of work, don't look me in the eye and say, well, you know, there's just more consistency with the Oklahoma offense. Yes, there is. There's also awful consistency. And the Oklahoma defense isn't that big of a train wreck in comparison to the Ohio State defense. They're both allowing points in droves. One's just doing it against a better conference opponent in Ohio State's schedule. All right, that's what it comes down to. So don't not take Georgia. I think Georgia should be in, is what I'm saying. Even though they're not a conference champion. They're a better football team than Notre Dame. They're a better football team than Oklahoma. They're a better football team than Ohio State. Okay, and I know there's people like giving me the middle finger because screw the SEC. I get that. I get that they play an 8-game conference schedule. I get that they have Samford. On their schedule. I know that Austin Prey got beat 45-0 by Georgia. I get it. But I see what I see with Georgia. I see what I see with Georgia with Kirby Smart. I know what their quarterback is and how good he was a year ago. Take Georgia. Just man up. Give me the four best. Okay?
You want to see that matchup again, though, Alabama-Georgia? I don't think America does.
I do.
I don't.
I do. You know why? Because Alabama doesn't want to see it. They escaped with their life. Tua was awful.
If anything, I think Tua, Georgia played their best game ever. Saban's not going to let it be that close again. They would roll over Georgia
the next time. They're not going to roll.
Absolutely. Tua had his worst game of his career.
You know why? Because they got to prepare for him. It wasn't a surprise second half. Who is this kid? Okay, it took Jalen Hurts, who had an awful first half against Georgia a year ago, in the championship game, and Tua came to the rescue this time. Hurts came to the rescue. Saban wants no part of having to try and beat Georgia twice and three times in a two-year span or a year span, forgive me. That's my answer to Bama fatigue. Let them play Georgia again. That'd be great. Because what's going to happen? Is Oklahoma going to kind of have some fun? Maybe. Is Oklahoma going to get teed off on eventually? Yeah. Is Oklahoma going to be able to stop Alabama's offense? No. This thing isn't going to be the sexy shootout in the Sugar Bowl where Bama got nicked by Big Game Bob and Kyler Murray. Okay? Remember that 3-4 years ago? Oklahoma was kind of teetering, and then they had their win to bring them back. They beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. Don't sell me that OU is a better conference champion from a better conference than Ohio State. Michigan, great football team. Purdue, I know they weren't as consistent as they needed to be, but that's their loss. You've got a long memory right now by the committee with Ohio State. Ohio State's gotten dismantled when they've been in the college football playoff since 2014. Okay. Ohio State's losses have all been blowouts. We're talking Iowa. The Penn State game wasn't a blowout, but it was a blown game when they were up by double digits. They got annihilated by Purdue on a Saturday night. Ohio State has an awful loss by an awful margin of victory, and they did not get the break that is a rematch in the conference championship. Just because the Big 12 can't split into divisions and OU gets Texas again, why should OU be rewarded for that? And the other part of this, too, as sloppy as Ohio State has looked, they've still won. And I know Maryland's nothing to write home about, but they're every inch the team that Texas Tech is, a game that, yes, Oklahoma had to win in a shootout against Texas Tech that's 5-7. Oklahoma, they allow 40 points, or do I need a drug test against Kansas? Okay, there is so much evidence of Oklahoma not being better than Ohio State that it just runs off the page here.
No, and I agree with you on that, but it was just like you knew it wasn't going to happen, though, if Oklahoma won.
Here's why you don't want Urban Meyer in the college football playoff. Bad look when it comes to media days. He's been suspended. He may retire. You're not going to let that dude go out the TO way, even if it's a year from now. Don't kid yourself. The Ohio State drama was in the back of the committee's mind. Tough to separate. And it played a part into why they were so non-dominant. You know, that's the word. Non-dominant is what you use for Ohio State because you're not used to seeing it. What did you see from Ohio State? You saw penalties. You saw stupid plays. You saw incredible skill guys. I mean, from a wide receiver and running game standpoint, along with Haskins, I mean, they're awesome. Good luck. And I know their run game's not what it used to be, but it's still pretty damn good. And their defense is all right. The fact that they had the sleeper hold on Northwestern and they couldn't put him down, that was bad. That thing should have been 48-10, not ending up 45-24.
They did cover.
They did cover, but it was a dirty late touchdown to get the cover. And Northwestern had every ounce in that third quarter. And going into the fourth quarter, when you had it down to a touchdown difference, and then you had it down to a three-point game, and you could never get over the hump. Ohio State did themselves no favors, but if we're going to go with the conference champion take to trump Georgia, then you better put the best conference champion in, and that is a Big Ten conference champion over a Big 12 conference champion.
Yeah,
that's my problem.
Yeah, and it comes down to the question, is Purdue better than Texas? And like you mentioned, they got to play Texas twice,
Texas
so that
sure
is kind of unfair.
Texas sure as hell isn't better than Maryland. I can tell you that.
Right.
I can show you that footage. Period.
Yeah.
Texas isn't that good a football team. They're not. They're okay. I think West Virginia is a squad. The other squad out of the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Okie State's pretty decent. I think Purdue would have a hell of a fun time against the Sooner defense. I think Purdue would have a great time against the Texas defense. And that's the team I'm talking about that beat Ohio State. That's what ruined it all. You've got a long memory. You got a list of bullet points of missteps by Ohio State. You have the Urban Meyer factor. And you have the fact that two out of their 12 games is they looked championship worthy. Well, Oklahoma didn't exactly dominate throughout. I mean, it's a far bigger indictment to me to have a team have to score 50 points. It's what drove you nuts this year about Nebraska football. It was the defense not being able to get out the field to stop anybody. That's everyday life in the Big 12, which I understand. But that's not the fourth best team to get into the playoff. And I, again, when it comes to what I have left in this 2018 year of college football as we get into 2019, give me Georgia, Alabama again, because I think it'd be a hell of a football game again. I don't want to see Oklahoma in there over Ohio State because, well, they're conference champs. Don't say that the Big 12 is a better conference than the Big 10. That's all I got for you. That's why I shake my head at what happened. And if we're going to say, well, strength of schedule, I mean, pick what's most important to you. Is it strength of schedule? Is it the fact you won a conference? How good was the conference you won? So the end result here is I am finally on board to expand to 8. Because Central Florida has won 25 straight. They came back and rolled with a backup quarterback, which I didn't think could happen. Let me see it. You got a bad list of bowl games, horrible matchups. It's not getting any better. Greg Smith's on the way. He'll be better.
And now,
back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Less than an hour, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore is coming up along with Charlie McBride, part of Blackshirt Monday. We say hi to Greg Smith, recruiting analyst, HaleVarsity.com and magazine. You can follow him at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg, how we been? What's going on, man?
I've been well, even though my Bears took a loss to the Giants yesterday. That was depressing, but the Lakers beat up on Jacob's son, so I'm happy with that portion of it.
See, and I know you like to rib Jacob about, you know, the son's getting worked, but that is supposed to happen, so.
I know, I don't feel quite as happy about it when it's the son's, but I think makes him more upset, actually.
If it makes you feel any better, a friend of the show, Jim McMahon, tweeted out, it's okay, we're still in first place. So both you Bears fans okay with that?
Yeah, I'll take that. It's just that you hate those games against teams like the Giants, but that ends up coming back to haunt you somehow.
I noticed the superiority in your voice. Teams like the Giants.
Yeah, it was tough to see, but at least the Packers and Vikings lost, too. And the Packers' loss was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Well, good luck now. They're going to get somebody that's worth a damn in Green Bay on a headset. So careful what you wish for. Nebraska wishing for help on the edge. They got it. Jamin Graham. And is it Jamin? Jamin, give me the help here on that. But he's from Alabama, from SEC country. Greg, what do you like about Graham's film? And kind of give us the rundown here how this worked out for Nebraska.
Yeah, it is Jamin Graham. I did get some schooling on that. I like his film a lot. I think that he's a good pickup for Nebraska. He's about 6'6", 220, really good athlete, explosive off the edge. Has an 85-inch wingspan, which is insane. Like, I can't even fathom that. Except for when you see the pictures of him, you see him and you go, oh, yeah, that's definitely all of 85 inches of a wingspan. That's insane. But you can't teach that, right? So if you can get him with Zach Ball and he's going to add muscle, that's going to be a big deal. I actually got a piece coming out here a little bit later in my notebook where I caught up with his coach, and he talked about how Jamin has always been at least a two-sport athlete in high school, most of the time a three-sport athlete, so he's never really had an off-season to train. So I'm sure that's music to Zach Duvall's ears. He'll like to hear that. But I really like this pickup out of the South for Nebraska, another athletic guy off the edge. You'll always take that.
Well, and from a hybrid standpoint, what are you kind of seeing from a projection standpoint? Is he a guy that, what do they want to do weight wise do you think, from a packing on? And is he going to be the hybrid guy, or are they going to put some beef on him to put him in with his hand in the dirt? I mean, what's your outlook with his position specifically?
Yeah, it probably depends on how he takes to the weight training and the nutrition plan, right? I think the initial plan is to start about an outside linebacker and then kind of see from there, right? I wouldn't be surprised with his frame if he doesn't end up kind of sliding down and playing with his hand in the dirt or doing a little bit of both so you have a little bit more speed out there, maybe on third down situations eventually in his career to be able to get after the passer a little bit. That's the beauty of having those guys that can play a little bit of both is that you have flexibility in what you want to do inside the defense with him.
Greg Smith with us, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. Jamin Graham, a commit number 22 for Nebraska, as he is that hybrid backer spot that is from SEC country. Give me a little bit more on just where Nebraska separated themselves from the other schools after him. I know Ole Miss was interested. I know Minnesota was looking at him. Louisville, I know they're kind of a train wreck, but historically speaking, Louisville's gotten some pretty good dudes that have become pass rush specialists. So what do you think separated Nebraska?
Yeah, I think, again, which has been a common theme with a lot of these recruits, especially from even from out of region, when they get around this coaching staff and when they get here for a visit like Graham was, they talk about the family feel, right? Now, everybody cares about football here. Everybody cares about you. And that really stands out, just the atmosphere within the football program. And it's clearly an intentional thing that Nebraska is trying to do. As you see, you know, kind of with the in-home visits that they take, and they've said this to different guys, and I've had different recruits say this to me in talking about those in-home visits, that Nebraska coaches recruit families, right? They're not just recruiting the kid, they're recruiting the family. They want everyone on board, and they want you to feel like they're going to take care of your son when he gets to Lincoln. So I think that ultimately it played a big factor in how they won Graham over.
Greg Smith's with us, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. Jamin Graham, latest commit for Nebraska. Greg's thoughts on that. Greg, for the weekend, who was in? How did those visits go? And what's this week look like for Nebraska on the road?
Yeah, so you had four total official visitors this weekend. One was Jamin Graham, we've been talking about. Obviously, it went very well for him. You had defensive back Tony Wallace out of Butler Community College. By all accounts, from what I hear behind the scenes, things went very well with him as well. I know Nebraska likes him. It's kind of that nickel back. They need some help in that area. As you saw, Nebraska has some issues in the slot last year. Keep in mind, unlike most junior college guys that they're recruiting, he wouldn't get to campus until the summer. So we'll kind of see how that impacts how Nebraska feels about him and if they want to take a commitment from him. I suspect they do want him in the fold still. And then you had two commits, and Ethan Piper and Garrett Snodgrass both take their visits, which is interesting because those guys have both been here. They were here for almost every home game. So it's always fun to see kind of them get the full official visit experience and with no game being able to hang out with the team and being able to really spend a lot of quality time around them.
And you got two in-state kids with two out-of-state kids. I mean, that's not coincidence, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I think you'll see that again and kind of what's on the horizon for this coming weekend and what will happen throughout the week is that throughout the week, I think Nebraska will continue to kind of look towards the future for this week. Maybe you'll see them pop up with some more 2020 guys, get through a lot of high schools to be able to talk to coaches and evaluate kids as they lift and all of that stuff. And then also they will continue. I think I have a feeling that this week you won't hear as much about some of the 2019 visits because I think Nebraska wants to operate a little bit more under the radar when it comes to getting maybe some guys to come and visit this weekend, which they're planning for a big weekend this weekend. They want to build it around kind of going to that Nebraska Creighton basketball game. I think they're going to try to be a little more low-key, so I don't think we'll see names leaking out here early in the week. That'll be later in the week. Plus, sometime this week, they're going to see Wandale Robinson if they haven't already. So that's always fun when that happens, right?
Yeah, and they're going to go back to see Robinson, and is it going to be Frost this time? Because I know it was held last time.
No, I think it this time would be Troy Walters, and then I think they're going to try and save Frost for next week or at the very end, right before the last possible time they could send Scott Frost, do all of the vetting up front to make sure that he's warmed up and that, you know, there's legit interest in him possibly flipping, and then try and send Scott Frost in to seal the deal at the end.
Talk to me about Ty Robinson. Where's Nebraska at with him?
I think they're in a great position with Ty, actually. I think that what USC did with their cleaning of house, they had to do it in a way. My personal opinion, they might as well have just gone ahead and let go of Clay Helton if they were going to let go of all of the assistants. I can't think of many situations outside of that Notre Dame one where that's actually worked. But one of the guys that got let go was Kenichi Udizi, the defensive line coach, who Ty actually told me that he had a really good relationship with. And I think that was one of the driving forces why Ty had such high interest in USC. So right after all of that happened, Nebraska went in home with him with Eric Chenander and Mike Dawson. They still have the Scott Frost visit in their back pocket as well, and that'll happen here soon. I think Nebraska's in a really great position with Ty Robinson. He moved his announcement date up to December 19th at his high school, and I think that bodes well for Nebraska at this point as well.
Any word on Winston Wright still with West Virginia?
Still with West Virginia. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't pop up on campus for an official visit this weekend. Another shifty slot receiver that you would like to see in this offense. The more playmakers, the better. I think that he'll end up on campus this weekend.
Greg, I got to get your take before we say goodbye on the college football playoff. And I know we'll get into Coach Frost's poll here in a little bit. Next segment. I think Georgia should have got in. I know they have two losses. I know they didn't win their league. I think they're that good a football team. And if you're going to give me the, well, we're going to reward the conference champ, fine. But it's not really an argument about the Big Ten being better than the Big 12. Why take the Big 12 champ? I get they avenged their loss. Ohio State didn't get a chance to do that. They got Northwestern instead of Purdue a second time. So am I off here? If you're going to take the conference champ, take Ohio State, not Oklahoma.
I think you have an argument there. I like the pick of Oklahoma. I thought that was the right pick. I did think that it was kind of a deciding factor that they got to avenge their loss. I also just, like, Ohio State has this issue with, I don't, like, Alabama always gets rewarded, right, even if they lose because they're Alabama and everybody kind of recognizes that. Ohio State has been in that situation a bunch, too. And I don't think they have gotten to the level where they should be rewarded for being blown out against Purdue and then beating an okay Northwestern team in the Big Ten championship. I thought Oklahoma was just a little bit stronger, though I think their Oklahoma's going to get blasted when they play Alabama. But I think Oklahoma should have gotten that slot.
See, and my take is, as bad as Oklahoma's defense is, I think Haskins and those wideouts would have a party. I think, and I know Oklahoma's offense is great, and Ohio State's defense has been up and down, but their offense is way better than that Oklahoma defense, and the defense isn't that big a train wreck in comparison to what Oklahoma has. So I think the better team, the team that would win head-to-head, is Ohio State.
I could go with you on that, especially considering I just can't see Oklahoma stopping Ohio State. The guy that should get even more national love, and it's not going to happen around here, is Dwayne Haskins. Like, he's having an incredible season, as well as Kyler Murray has played. Haskins had a big time season, so I could see that one as a coin flip, Ohio State or Oklahoma, either way. I just also can't wrap my mind around rewarding Urban Meyer and letting him back in the playoffs.
Well, and that's, don't kid yourself. I mean, the urban factor was real and spectacular this time with keeping them out, with all the drama and BS he's been a part of. It's not a great.
He's not making it better either.
No, he's not a great PR look. I mean, that's part of this here with the committee, if you want to just be flat out honest. Got 60 seconds left. Where would you rank Georgia? Where would Greg Smith put Georgia?
I would have put Georgia would be five for me, right above Ohio State. I would have Ohio State six, Georgia five, and then Oklahoma four, and the rest of the group that they had.
Okay. So if you would, okay. So you think Georgia's? You penalize Georgia for two losses, or you just think they're not? Am I too high on them as far as their talent?
No, I'm penalizing them for two losses. I think they are extremely talented. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's where we would have got. We get into such a sticky situation, because if we really did pick the four best teams, mm-hmm. I do think Georgia is one of the best four. You just can't have them in there with two losses and not winning their league.
Greg, awesome stuff. We'll be reading you. HailVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV is where you follow him on Twitter. Greg, thanks for the time today.
Hey, thanks as always, man. Have a good week.
You too. We'll talk some Nebraska basketball. 1-0 in Big Ten play. That's on the way.
Miss us?
Go!
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. We'll get caught up 20 minutes from now with Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. Mondays with Charlie. We'll hear from Jay Moore and some thoughts on the playoff. So we've spent a lot of time today talking about, do you expand it or not? And we talk about this every year. I'm finally on board. And if you're not on board to expand to 8, then how about you give me 6 with a bye for Clemson and a bye for Alabama? And the Central Florida discussion needs to be had, too. I mean, they've won 25 in a row. Boise was flat-out dominant for a long period of time, and the best they could ever sniff was a Fiesta Bowl, one for the ages against Oklahoma, the Statue of Liberty, and beating Adrian Peterson and Big Game Bob. They've never crashed a party. Central Florida never crashed a party. Scott Frost and a lot of the coaches voted along party lines, as in for their conference, and everybody that voted with the coaches poll had Ohio State 4th that was from the Big Ten. Scott Frost had Ohio State 4th. He had Central Florida 5th. I think Coach Calhoun of Air Force had Central Florida 5th. There's one other big-time coach from a Power 5 that had Ohio State in there at 4th. And I get what Coach Frost is doing, putting Ohio State in front of Central Florida. He is now in the Big Ten, and he's got to do what's best for his league. And he probably believes, and he's not wrong, that Ohio State would beat Central Florida. And they would beat Central Florida without Mackenzie Milton. That's really all the math you need to do on this. When it comes to bowl matchups, I mean, it's set up well for the Big Ten. It's set up well again for the Big Ten, but this is the third year in a row that the Big Ten doesn't have their champion in. Okay, Ohio State got in, won the thing to kick off playoff time. They did in 2014. Michigan State, great football team in 2015. They were messy in the first half, got down, and then got put to sleep by Alabama. Okay, 2016, 2017. Now 2018, you have not had your champion in. Ohio State did get in as your non-champ, even though Penn State went to the Rose Bowl as your conference champ when they came back against Wisconsin 2 years ago. But Ohio State still got in, and because of their quarterback play, which is a different quarterback style now, you've got a pass-first guy at Ohio State versus the JT Barretts of the world that couldn't throw or get anything downfield against Clemson. Clemson embarrassed a really good and talented Ohio State team. That Clemson team ended up winning the national championship. Last year, you had your Big Ten pay-per-view where they got to watch and not be a part of it. So if you're the Big Ten, your approach, and Sammy McEwen wrote about this today, and it's something to spend a few minutes on, and that is the Big Ten's theory for success here. Right, you're going to play one monster, big-time name, non-conference team. You're not going to play any FCS squads if you can help it. Nebraska, an exception this year because of Mother Nature when they took on Bethune-Cookman. Then you're going to play 9 conference games. And I like playing 9 conference games. I like it better than scheduling some hack squad. Either go big or go home with who you're scheduling. And that's a tough ask because if you have 2 losses or more, you're out. And while it'd be cool to see what Coach DiNardo was talking about last week, a Big Ten SEC football challenge, you're not going to do it. The SEC and the ACC have an advantage with their conference schedule. They do. Notre Dame gets to date part of the ACC, and they're coming up great at the blackjack table every year with it when they're good, because what'd they get this year? Well, I mean, they got a good Syracuse team. Most years they're going to get Florida State, not their fault, Florida State was down, but Florida State was on their schedule. They get to play the U, right? And they'll get Clemson. So every other year, you're loaded up with two opportunities against really quality ACC opponents. You're going to get Michigan and Michigan State, somebody from the Big Ten. They played Northwestern. You got USC. So as much as I don't care for Notre Dame not having a conference championship game, they are not quite independent anymore, but man, they go pound for pound with their schedule game in, game out. And most of their games were against really, even the Service Academy games are really good, especially when you look at the Service Academies this year. I mean, they played Army. I mean, this year, Army is a hell of a football team. Just go ask Oklahoma. So I'm looking at the Big Ten needing to change, make some changes if they want to get back into the playoff. One, they need their conference commissioner, and I love Jim Delaney, but he needs to be going bat bleep that they didn't get in. And it's not that the fact that they got slighted again, it's got who they got slighted by. That's the big freaking 12, okay? They're not as bad as the Pac-12. That thing's a freaking nightmare. They're a joke. They're a joke in the non-conference, and they're a joke in their conference championship game, and nobody's watching. But you really don't have any balance. I mean, you have a murderer's row for Ohio State to get through in the East, which they did. And then this extra ninth game, we could say, was Purdue. You're one of your crossovers. You don't have that ninth game. It's not a Purdue loss at 7 o'clock for the world to see you get beat by 20 by, at that point in time, a 6-4 football team that finished 6-6. What was Purdue? They were 3-3. Purdue was 3-3, and they housed Ohio State. So what you got to do here, and this is Bill Bender's suggestion, is maybe shake up the divisions or just get rid of it, because the Oklahoma squad, they got to go round robin. So maybe it's time for the Big Ten to do that. You're also looking at 2017 with the bowl record, some of the positives from the Big Ten. The Big Ten went 7-1 in bowl games. No one gave a damn. Beating Michigan wasn't enough. The committee's going to ask you and look at each other and say, what's our reason to keep them out? 20-point loss at Purdue for Ohio State. 3-point loss to Texas, neutral site. Their defense is garbage. Georgia has two losses. Great against Alabama, blown out by LSU. LSU's not as good as we thought because, well, they the team that hurt them, LSU's now 9-3. The Big Ten's got to take a look. Do they want to be a team in a league that is just good with going to New Year's Day sixes and making money, or do they want to be champions? That's the question you got to ask yourself. And Commissioner Delaney's all about, I think, more so making money. And I think he's pretty realistic. We'll get to your calls here, so hang on the line. I don't think he thinks Ohio State's vintage this year, so why be fake? But overall, your league is better than the Big 12, and you belong in. We'll get to your calls. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues. Great to be with you on a Monday. Coach McBride's on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big Ten is at a big-time disadvantage. It's playing 9 conference games. The crossover has bitten Iowa, or I should say has bitten Michigan, has bitten Ohio State. And the Big 12 plays the top two teams, period. It was a rematch, but it got Oklahoma in. And think about this as we wind down. We'll talk to Coach McBride coming up as we carry over this situation for the Big 10. If your second place team, i.e. Michigan, is still better than your West Division champ, can you exempt Michigan for finishing second in their own division versus either shake up the divisional imbalance or just take the top two teams? And that in some years that will be your West champion. Some year, maybe Nebraska against Ohio State. Maybe Nebraska against Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. You had it with Penn State and in Wisconsin, right? Even though Ohio State didn't get in that year as the East Division champ, they got into the playoff over Penn State because Penn State had two losses. That's something you'd think about.
Yeah, but I think as a Nebraska fan, you don't want to see that ever. You're in a nice West Division. You're rebuilding right now. Yeah, exactly. No West team wants that to happen is the thing. But if you're on the East, absolutely.
No. I mean, that's kind of where I was going. And the Urban Meyer factor, and then you had, I think Jim Delaney knows his football, so he's going to be selective with who he's plugging for. He's probably ready for Urban to retire. Brian's with us. We'll squeeze you in here, Brian. Brian, thanks for calling. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, I had to pick up my kid.
No, you're good. You're good.
So you're, the last segment, you were saying that like a round robin, like the Big 12 does. So that'd be 12 Big 10 games and no conference, no out of conference.
You'd have no non-conference. I don't know that I want to do that. That's why I'm wondering about if you keep it the way it is, but you say that the second play East team's higher ranked than your West Division champ, do you exempt them?
Yeah. See, I think the SEC and the ACC are just a bunch of pansies. You need to rename the SEC conference to the Alabama conference or the Georgia conference. You know, which flip them, whatever. And the ACC, given any given year, you know, you just name it the Clemson or the Florida State conference or the Miami conference.
See, the thing I like, Brian, about the ACC though, that helps Notre Dame. They need to make Notre Dame make a declaration.
I think Notre Dame needs to be a Big Ten team.
Well, they'll never do that. They've had their opportunities. They get to date the ACC right now, and it's worked out because in some years they'll get Florida State. Some years they'll get Clemson. Some years they'll get Louisville when Louisville is worth a damn. Some years they'll get – who else is good out of the ACC? I've kind of hit all three, haven't I?
But yeah.
The point is they get to play those guys, and it counts, and it works, and then they get a Michigan and a Northwestern, and they'll get a marquee Big Ten team, and then they'll get the Pac-12 team. They got SC every year. So, I mean
– I look at the SEC, majority of the SEC and majority of the ACC as powder puff teams. You got your Alabama, you got your Florida,
I don't know
LSU.
I disagree with you, Brian. Thanks for the call on the SEC. I hate to be a homer for the SEC. I'm not. But I'm not. They're not a power. They're not puffy at all. They're good. They're good. They're tremendous. They're deep. So is the Big Ten, though. That's why it's BS that your conference champ isn't in. Here comes Coach McBride next hour.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, it's Hour 2 at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of North Chicago is Danny Burke. The pride of South Chicago is Coach Charlie McBride. Mondays with Charlie, we say hi to Coach McBride. Coach, how's the weather up there for you?
Well, it's dusty snow. It blows away. Wind's blowing so much, it doesn't have a chance.
Well, we apologize for sending it that direction to you.
That's okay. It's the time of year.
It is. I need to get your thoughts on a couple of retirements to start out the show. Turner Gill has stepped down at Liberty University, did an amazing job of transitioning Liberty into Division I. 6-6 was their record this year. And Turner's taken time out to be with his wife, who's got a heart condition. That's the story that I just saw. And what's your overall take on Turner? I know you were there and coached when he played. You were there when he coached. And you've seen him in different coaching stops. Talk to me about the coach and the man Turner Gill is.
Well, Turner was probably one of the most respected coaches I've been around. The players really, not only because he played there, but I think the kind of person he was. And, you know, he was always straightforward, and he was always the kind of guy that would go out of his way for you. You know, and I know for a fact that, you know, his family means a ton to him. I mean, a lot of times, you know, we'd be going maybe someplace in the summertime to maybe pro team or something like that. And I remember one time he said he just needed to stay home with his family. So, you know, that was true. I mean, we probably all should have done that a little more. And I know how faithful he is to his family. And he's just as good a person as you could find. I mean, I don't know how you can find anything wrong with him. He's just, you know, one of those deep, special people. I know I heard offensive linemen say when it made a big difference when he was in the huddle. So, I mean, he's just done the right things with his life. And I think part of it, I think he learned a lot from working with Tom and being around him and see what kind of a person Tom was. And I think that rubbed off on him, too.
Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Mondays with Charlie. Bill Snyder hanging it up. I don't know that he was ready to. I don't think he got his way, and what I mean by that is I think he wanted his son to take over. I don't think the folks down in Manhattan wanted that to happen, so long and short of it, Bill Snyder's no longer at Kansas State, but what was it like preparing for him?
It's awful. You know, those kids were so well coached. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you know, I remember they beat us one time, and when we were leaving town, we got into Maryville, I think it was, right up the road, and we were on our way home. And on one corner, there were a bunch of kids standing there, and I was sitting in the front of the bus, and I got close to them, and they had a great big sign that says, "Losers turn left." And then we went down to the other end of the street to go back up to Lincoln. He went through town and then turned up, and there were a bunch of kids there too. Said, "Losers turn right." So, but I mean, you know, that's what it was so exciting about the guy. What he did, I mean, is amazing what he did for Kansas State. It just, you know, we used to go down there, and it was almost like playing a high school game until he really started growing and really did a great job of recruiting. And I think at first he realized that one time he said to me that really hard for him to get the top players, you know, in the state, around the area. So he went the junior college route for a while till he, you know, could get it going, you know, with high school people. And that took winning, and they did that.
Yes, they did. And, I mean, he was able to find a niche with the JUCO kids. And he didn't hit every year, but when he hit, man, he hit with a Michael Bishop or –
right.
Or who's the kid that's Lockett? Both the Lockett kids. I mean, the son and the father were incredible. Right. So,
well, that's the kind of thing you go down there, and there was always somebody. But it was kind of sad a little bit in a way as I watched the years when he got off the boat for a little bit. He took a year or so off and then came back and. You know, to see how, you know, I know what he wanted. I mean, I've said that to my wife several times. He just wants his son to be the coach, and he wants to hang in there until, you know, they think he can do it. And, of course, I just, you know, that's scary about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it just is probably better for both of them. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think he's tired of football. I just think the hours get to you too much, and you can only be away from your family so long.
Sure.
And so, you know, he walked to work and he did things. And I hope that the people realize what they, you know, experienced having him around.
Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Mondays with Charlie. Coach, what's your reaction to the college football playoff? Here's my thoughts, and you can tell me I'm nuts. I think Georgia's, I know they lost two games. I know they didn't have a, air quote, big-time win, but they've looked pretty darn good and almost should have beat Alabama, should have, could have, would have, I get it. But I think Georgia looks great. And if you're going to give me a conference champion, the Big Ten's a better league than the Big 12, so I would have leaned Ohio State. And I think Oklahoma-Ohio State would have been a good football game. I don't think OU's a slam dunk over Ohio State, but that's the four we have. What's your take on the four in the playoff, and do you think it's time to expand?
Well, I said that from the beginning. I just thought that there's the controversy that goes on right at this point is you know, we're talking about some teams right now that are deserve to be in something that plays for a national championship, mm-hmm. and that's Ohio State, you know, and Georgia, you know, for sure. And, you know, that just you hate to see them when you know what kind of football team they have. And probably in reality, you know, as far as a team, you know, how good they are, I would say that the fourth person probably in my heart should be probably Georgia, because mm-hmm. and it doesn't have anything to do with what they have to do or how their rules are, because I don't know all those.
Right.
But I mean, just to see one of the best teams, and Ohio State, you know, is there. I mean, you know what they can do. What'd they do to Michigan? I mean, they made them look like fools. And I just think the controversy and the things that went around, you know, Ohio State for a while there hurt them. Mm-hmm. But I think the maturity of their quarterback and things made them a better football team. And I think by him being more confident, I think that made all the offensive people more confident. And, you know, the guy's amazing. And I think one of the other things, too, is, you know, somehow I think the Big Ten's been shut out quite a few times. And, you know, to have Georgia and Alabama maybe end up playing again, you know, maybe that entered some of it into it, and mm-hmm. they took Oklahoma. I think defensively, when you're talking about a team, mm-hmm. well, you know, you got to separate their offense from their defense. They get to a point where they score more points. However, they did play better in their last game that I watched. And so hopefully they, you know, they're really a representative of being in that top four.
Well, and in Central Florida, I was shocked as all get out that they won against Memphis with their backup quarterback. You've been a part a couple of different times of winning mm-hmm. 25 games in a row. That's not easy.
Well, the one thing about, you know, he's big, he's mm-hmm. bigger, and he can run, and you know that. Of course, you know, it was, you know, losing the real quarterback, mm-hmm. a guy that may be, you know, as good as any of them.
Right.
You know, lose him really hurt. But the kids all picked up, and it was next guy up. And look at what Alabama did the other night. And
yeah,
I think they stepped back a little bit with the leadership part, but I don't think they stepped back because I think a lot of those kids are, you know, really thinking about that kid laying in the hospital and what had happened to him, really happened to him, because my understanding is that he had a good chance to actually lose that leg.
He did, yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, they've got motivation. It's, you know, like it's almost like win one for the Gipper.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they came back. You know, it didn't look good early, but they know how to win. And they did it. And I think that speaks a lot for Scott and what he did down there and how he taught them how to win. And, you know, I think a lot of it was hard work and character.
Charlie McBride's with us, Mondays with Charlie Hale, Varsity Radio. Coach, I want to ask you this question about defense and how Nebraska defensively can kind of be ready for anything or anybody in today's college football offensive array. You have different styles. And mm-hmm. the one thing that I really enjoyed about your defense is you could stop Oklahoma's wishbone, and then you had to stop Colorado's eye bone, and then you had to stop Washington's one back, and then you had to stop Charlie Ward's shotgun, and then Spurrier's shotgun. You had to do it all, and you guys did it. How were you able to be so good against whoever lined up against you on offense?
Well, I think we really adjusted our – we didn't have a lot of defenses. We maybe had a lot of inline stunts and some of those things. But we really didn't have a lot of things to do, and so we were able to adjust all what we had, you know, against no backs, and we got into that course, you know, and we learned from it too. But I think one thing we learned is that there are certain formations – you can do certain things with. In other words, we were in a position where if they went no backs, when we called the secondary coverage, we would add play it run it, or I forget the other word actually we used for it, but was live, I guess it was live, run it or live. And if it was live, we're going to run a blitz against that thing. And that was automatic with the players when they got out there and they went to one back. Now, a lot of teams are one back a lot. Mm-hmm. So you have to, if you're going to do that, then you might want to still run your blitz package, but you want to teach them some a different blitzes at different times, you know. So there's ways to get it in there and change that up, too. But I think changing the defenses is in the fronts and doing all that stuff and getting the kids in another position that they aren't working on every day, I think is really hard on them. So I think you have to really start with your core, your basic defense, and go from there. We were, of course, more of a pressure defense because we had some speed. We could get to the people fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so if they didn't get the ball off right away, we had a good chance, you know. And that's the thing I think that hurts a little bit, that, you know, you just have to make a decision on what you do. I mean, the zone coverages are set up so that the receivers get to be really good at it. They'll find the open hole and bang, if the offensive line does a job, it's really hard to cover. If they're playing man-to-man, good luck if you don't have the speed to do it.
Well, and just think, too, I mean, the way that teams are getting the football out of their hands so fast, that it alleviates a lot of what pressure you can bring. And the reason I ask that is you've got just different styles in the Big Ten, where Michigan State and Iowa and Wisconsin are going to line up and go meat and potatoes on you. Ohio State's right. Their own separate thing. Penn State's their own thing. And then you got Purdue right. That's kind of a high wire act. So you just got to be able to handle it all. And I wondered how you guys did it, because you did it well.
Well, the kids were ingrained to stop the run. I mean, no matter what. We were going to stop the run, and if we could, then we're just going to get our tails in the air and we're going to go, because we know that the percentage of the pass when they're behind or whatever it is pretty good if they can't run the football. And I think that at that point you can get a little reckless, you know, with your pass rush. I mean, you have lanes to stay in, but you also have your eyes. If he changes the course, you're going to get out of your lane,
right?
You know, if he's going one way or the other. So that was a big thing. I think it was, you know, just doing the things and understanding, make them understand what pressure meant, that it wasn't always a sack. It was something different. You can see it every week on Sunday. Sure. A guy will throw halfway in an interception. It goes up in the air like a balloon. And, you know, so those are things that when, you know, you talk about turnovers, those are the things you fight for with your, you know, when you're putting in any kind of defense. You'd really, really have to, you know, you just don't say it one time.
Right.
You know, it's ingrained in them. It's like being in a cult, I guess you'd say.
Charlie McBride's with us. It's like being in a cult. There you go. I like that. Well, Coach, we'll talk next week. Best to you, and stay warm, okay. All right?
I'll do it. I can do that. I got enough sweaters and sweatshirts and stuff. Do it. Thanks a lot for having me.
You take
care. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, okay. Take care. It was like being in a cult. That's hilarious. Oh, the defense, that's so good. Blackshirt, Oscar, NFLer, Jay Moore's on the way. Hail Varsity continues.
All-State, two-year starter, and rush in for the Big Red, and NFL vet.
Is Dudeness or Duder or... you know, El Deuterino if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's Blackshirt Jay Moore with Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in, it's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. I'm looking at Brandon Vogel's story, best or most deserving for the college football playoff, and I had a giggle, and it's probably a little cynical here with Georgia and their just tremendous teams heads down on the bench. We bring in Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. What's your message? Expand it to 8, go to 6, keep it at 4. Do you like the 4 that are in?
I'm going to 8 right away. That just alleviates all this. I know some people, they love the discussion, they love the banter, they love the constant talking, the nonsense. Some people just enjoy that. Just, you know, they can't, they just like to hear themselves talk and make useless claims. Just take this thing to 8. I mean, how sweet would it be for this weekend that we had Alabama versus UCF at Alabama? You know, your top 4 seed get home field advantage, you get another home game. How sweet would it be for, like, you know, you have UCF at Alabama, you know, you have Clemson, I'm trying to think of 7, Michigan at Clemson, Ohio State going to Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma type, you know, this, that would just be a thing of beauty. You, all of a sudden you get your 4, your 2 semifinal games as part of the bowl. I mean, that seems pretty easy to me. That would be changed. And then another thing I'm changing too is, you got to get everyone on the same page with how many non-conference games they play. I think that'll help as well, because you have Georgia, or you have SEC schools out here only playing 8 and throwing a cupcake in, you know, second to third to last week of the season. Then you have Big Ten, ACC schools playing 9. So that just, you know, things just don't add up there as well. But I would change the 8 first and foremost. Just do away with all this crazy talk and banter. And I think they got it right. I do. You had to go that route with Oklahoma. They won their conference championships. They beat the team who they lost to earlier in the year, and that's Texas. Does Georgia look like a really good football team? Absolutely. But win your games in the regular season, you know, and don't schedule all these cupcakes for your four non-conference, you know, scheduled games. I mean, their regular SEC schedule was not very tough. I mean, obviously LSU was their one loss, but, you know, Kentucky, South Carolina, you know, you have Florida in there, but Florida wasn't that great. You know, just and you can't say that SEC is the toughest conference top to bottom. There's no argument there. That's the Big Ten. That's a no-brainer. But they got it right. It'll be interesting to see how many more years it takes to either take the thing to 6 and let the first top 2 seeds get a bye, or take this to 8 and you start scheduling your top four seeds get home games. I mean, to me, that's the thing of beauty. I mean, that'd be so much fun to watch this weekend. Can you imagine the TV ratings? You know, the TV companies, the FS1s, the ESPNs, the CBSs, carry them all. I mean, just to see that'd be unreal. Instead, you know, hey, no offense to the Army Navy game, the Heisman Trophy ceremony, but I'd like to see those 4 games go down as well this Saturday. That'd be phenomenal. And it needs to happen. It does. And get this thing right. But other than that, they did get the 4 teams right, in my opinion.
Jay Moore's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at JayMoore44. Jay, and I agree with you, I think the Big Ten was deeper. And I know Kentucky was good, and I know Mississippi State was ranked, and I know A&M was an 8-win football team that almost beat Clemson. And I know that LSU was good. You know, they capped off at 9 wins and couldn't quite get past A&M. They trashed Georgia. I think Georgia's phenomenal. I think they belong in. I understand that if you win your conference, that should be a data point that's got some weight, and it is. But back to the Big Ten being the toughest league. So if Ohio State would have got Purdue and avenged that loss, do you think they get in over Oklahoma?
Oh, man.
Because that's what's killing Ohio. Ohio State's looked like garbage 10 of their 12 weeks, right? But
no,
they
looked awful. No, they looked awful. I mean, they would for sure get in, because if they would have maybe just squeaked out a win against Michigan and didn't curb stomp them like they did, the scenario is a lot different. But the fact that they just beat, you know, the third best team in the nation, or I know they're 4, but I would have put them ahead of Notre Dame maybe. I don't know. It's a toss up. Anyways, they were the top 4 of the nation. They just they took them. You know, they smoked them. No other way to put it. They beat a decent Northwestern team, but I think if they would have got Purdue, absolutely, I think they would have no doubt have gotten in, just because of the Big Ten is a better conference than the Big 12. You can get a look at that. You want to throw the eye test in there. You got to look at that. Oklahoma did have some close wins. I mean, they still don't have a defense. I mean, Oklahoma got to score 50-some points every game just because so their defense can give up 45. That's just how the Big 12 rolls nowadays. But I mean, you look at the whole, you know, go back to the Georgia thing, and you want to talk about, I agree. Georgia looks like one of the top four football teams in the nation. But we've talked, you know, you and I have gone at length about moral victories. Now you're trying to give a moral victory to Georgia. I mean, if we're talking about this, then hell, Nebraska should be in a bowl game at 7-5 because you know what? They looked a lot better than a 4-8 football team this year.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. Win your games. Don't get two losses, you know? And other than that, make it 8 games. And you really don't have to worry about it anymore.
I don't know that there's the outrage that needs to be happening from Jim Delaney unless he's kind of being a stand-up guy about it, going, yeah, we're not vintage Ohio State this year. We're not vintage conference champion this year, and we'll take the two teams in the New Year's Day six and keep counting that money. I kind of wonder about his priority as far as campaigning or stumping for a Big Ten team to get in. Other than that, I can't say Ohio State's would work Oklahoma, but I can't say Oklahoma would beat Ohio State. It comes down to who's playing their A game. And I think Georgia probably beats both of them by a touchdown. You can't sneeze at 11-2 versus 12-1. So it's a mess. I was kind of against expansion a year ago. I'm all for it right now because I want to see more great football. We've got crap for bowl matchups. We really have garbage bowl matchups with the exception of a couple, and even the college football playoff's going to suck. I mean, Clemson's probably going to drill Notre Dame. Alabama's going to go pinata time on Oklahoma. And you get, I mean, give me Georgia, Ohio State at least, for the love of God. Give me Florida, UCF. Let's see who the real state champ is, and we don't get that. We get Michigan and Florida. Don't worry, I'll be at the bar. I don't care. I don't want to see that again. Let's switch gears, Jay, from college football playoff to some Nebraska football. You know, Nebraska is in desperate need of pass rush specialists. Nebraska targeting and getting outside linebacker Jamin Graham. He committed to Nebraska over the weekend. He's a kid out of Alabama. He is 6'6", 230. And Jovan DeWitt had a picture of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, which I thought was pretty good. He's a guy that you want to get after the quarterback. Ole Miss and Louisville and Minnesota after him as well. So he joined Scott's Bluff standout Garrett Nelson at that outside linebacker spot. What's your quick thought on some of the film you've seen on Graham? And I like kids in the SEC footprint. I like what Nebraska was able to do. What impressions do you have about Jamin?
I mean, just this is how long and athletic he is. I mean, that people have asked me, you know, do you see Nebraska recruiting to more of smaller, you know, maybe a Breon Dixon type, JoJo Doman type outside linebacker to get more speed and versatility in the passing game, or do you see longer athletic? I'm like, oh man, it's got to be longer athletic. Your prototypical outside linebacker. That's what he is. Good athletic ability, good size, good speed. And again, I'm one of those guys who, yeah, your high school film can look really, really good. And obviously when you have highlight, you know, it looks great. But just getting that, how does that how equate to Big Ten and into Division I football? Don't know until he gets here in fall camp. And you get to see that put on display. You get to see, you know, when a guy gets a little more in depth with the play calls defensively, and he has a little more he has a few more responsibilities defensively than just, hey, go get the ball. As a lot of times some of those guys in high school programs have. Then you kind of see, you know, can he handle that the mental side of things and still be physical and still play with heavy hands if they pass rush and drop it into coverage, communicate, and all those type of things. But it's a good get. It's a great get. I tell you what, getting guys that size, the length, you know, whether he is plays right away or a year or two down the road. I mean, getting guys like him, Caleb Tanner's built the exact same way. You have guys like Tyron Ferguson are built very, very, very similar. Getting those guys another year or two under Duvall's system. I mean, those guys are gonna be free as long as they can handle everything mentally. Those guys are gonna be absolute pain in the rear ends to deal with from the edge. And I'm happy when we're working. Let's hopefully get another four or five. You know, guys that are about 6'5 to 6'6 and 230 to 250 just to roll off the edge. And that'll cause a major headache for Big Ten offenses and QBs in this conference.
Jay Moore's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. At JayMoore44 is where you follow him on Twitter. Jay, got a couple minutes left here. What's your take, about a minute actually, with your old roommate, Zach Taylor? His name's come up for head coaching jobs because of the job that is going on in L.A. and with what he's doing. Put yourself in Zach's spot. Is he ready to jump at a head job, or does he want to give it another year doing things at a high level as OC and quarterback guru with Goff?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't spoken to Zach personally about this, but I mean, not surprised. I mean, he's kind of paid his dues. You know, he's spent his time in the college ranks. He's bounced around a few places in the NFL, you know, with the Dolphins for a little bit, obviously with the Rams now. And, you know, the thing is, people, when you're associated with great coaches, which is Sean McVay, and Sean McVay is, if there's a savant of offensive mentality in the NFL, I mean, that's Sean McVay. And obviously, you're not going to pluck him from the Rams. So people are like, who's the next guy we can get to have that sort of mindset, that theme, offensive theme that from his system? That would be Zach. Now it's just whether or not he's ready to make that jump. It'd be hard to turn down if the Browns, the Packers came calling and said, hey, you know, here's $4-6 million over a 5-6 year period to come coach this program. It'd be hard to turn down. You get in this business for one reason. You love coaching, but it's to be a head coach. I think just, you know, he's obviously a phenomenal person, A, but B, just a hell of a football coach. And the fact that he's with one of the smartest minds in the game of football right now just boosted his stock up there. It's just whether or not he's ready to make that jump. But like I said, it'd be really, really hard to turn down that type of move, whether he's ready for it or not. If it's there, I don't know what would keep him from taking it. I know he's got four little ones at home, and his wife Sarah it goes crazy sometimes. But you know, they'd just be moving again, which she's used to because her dad was Mike Sherman with the Packers for all those years and with A&M. So she's definitely used to that lifestyle. But I hope he does get a shot, because if he does, whoever he's coaching, all of a sudden, I've never had a favorite NFL team. I'll tell you that. Whoever he's coaching, I'm a rocket that gear hard with the Packers or the Browns, whoever it may be. I just became that biggest fan of wherever he's the head coach, that's for sure.
Jay, we'll get caught up again next week, bud. Thanks for a few minutes.
Yep, you got it, guys.
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke.
Back with you. Big thanks to Jay Moore. Don't want to miss Black Shirt Monday. Jay Moore, Charlie McBride in the 5 o'clock hour. Great stuff from Greg Smith in hour one on recruiting. HailVarsity.com or iTunes is where you can go. The Holiday Hail Mary qualification coming up here before 6. A reminder to you about your friends at Madonna Proactive. Why wait till January to make that New Year's resolution? Make your resolution to get in better health today. Sign up this month, pay no initiation fee, and get January free with an annual contract. Give them a ring. Give Madonna Proactive a ring, 56th and Pine Lake, 402-420-0000, or get online, madonnaproactive.org. If you need to rehab a bit with ankle, knee, weight-bearing issues, Madonna Therapy Plus, the therapy pool, and AquaTrack is second to none. It's Lincoln's only indoor enclosed AquaTrack, 95 degrees, feels incredible. And the 4 mile per hour current is going to help improve strength, balance, and endurance for you. So that's one of the many, many benefits of Madonna Proactive and Therapy Plus. Let's talk Nebraska basketball. What'd you think? Did you brave the snow, the cold, and head to PBA yesterday? Did you catch it on BTN? We had the Real Red Tip-Off Show. We're doing that an hour before every Nebraska basketball game in conference in for Creighton on Saturday, jacked for that one. Nebraska's got a little task at hand, and that is Minnesota. Waiting, that's going to be a tough, tough ball game for Nebraska. We'll spend more time this week on that ball game as it approaches on Wednesday. But listen, I thought Nebraska shot well enough from three. I thought they were patient offensively. And I thought that when push comes to shove and you're playing a team like Illinois that is a team that is ultra-talented and they hang around every game they're in, they didn't have a chance to hang around at all. Nebraska jumped out 15-5. Nebraska was poised. Nebraska was focused. Nebraska got enough offense. I know there's a couple scoring droughts. Mix it in. It's just part of Nebraska basketball. If I could tell you and nail down a time of when the scoring drought was going to happen, I'd tell you to go get some ice cream or go get another hot dog. I can't. I just know that they're going to happen. I know Nebraska's defense is going to travel and dwell at PBA. They are phenomenal defensively. That is all you got to know. You got great minutes from Borchardt and Brady, Hyman. You know, Glenn was in foul trouble, but Nana was decent to really good off the bench. And I know James Palmer didn't shoot well, but guess what? He went 12 of 14 from the free throw line, and it was all right. Cope was Cope. And Glenn was very efficient despite his foul problems. Hey, it's a good win. Illinois is a team that just likes to mess things up. And a 15-point win at home and the cover, says Danny Burke, is good enough for you. Wednesday is what I worry about with the look ahead because Creighton looms. Nebraska wants to drill Creighton. They haven't touched Creighton forever. And first things first, though, I mean, get to 2-0 in conference. Minnesota is a completely losable game for Nebraska. And it's a tough place to play, a tough place to win. Here's Coach Miles yesterday after the game when it came to handling that pressure. That's one of the questions we talked about yesterday. How is Nebraska going to deal with the Illini pressure?
Illinois does a terrific job defensively in terms of creating turnovers, and they're so good on the ball, you know, that they force you to play strong all night. If there's one thing that I didn't think we did well was handle the ball well, that we had far too many turnovers. It's interesting, after the game, James was going to be interviewed on TV, and I said, "You did a great job tonight, James." He goes, "Yeah, too many turnovers, man. I got to clean that up." And that's what you want to hear. And he wouldn't have to say that. He could say, "Hey, remember, I got the foul line 14 times or whatever." But it's always good when you hear it.
Nebraska shot 48%, 42% from three-point land, 83%. That was your difference from the free throw line. I think 25 of 30 was the number. And that was your difference. 16 turnovers was awful.
That's what I was going to point out. That, I mean, that's what we were preaching before the game. You can't have those turnovers. And luckily Illinois, it worked out for them.
And but Illinois' defense is going to do that to teams. It's kept them in it all season long. This is a very key point from Coach Miles. He was asked about, you know, how important was it to jump out and play with the lead against a team like Illinois, because Notre Dame did not drop the hammer, so to speak, early or often, and it was a two-point game. Gonzaga, as that thing was winding down, Illinois was a three away from taking a lead, and we're talking late, late, late in the game. That's the number one team in the country. So Nebraska's focus, they need to be as a bunch of fifth-year seniors doing it and being tasked to do it are two different things. Nebraska's been very, very good at coming out and handling their business.
It was really important to, with these guys, to get on top of them and then keep them at arm's length. That's been hard for a lot of teams to do. Gonzaga hasn't done it. Notre Dame didn't do it. And we were able to. But, you know, I think getting to the foul line for us was important. And then, you know, the fact we made some threes tonight helped, too, because if we can do both of those, then you're a tough out.
They are. Here's the thing. And is Nebraska going to be able to cut three here, Danny? Is Nebraska going to be able to rely on 25 points from the free throw line a game? I mean, you're going to have venues, and it might be Wednesday, where you're traveling and the ref will swallow his whistle for the road team. Can you shoot well enough? Right now you'll take it, but Coach Miles asked, hey, are you concerned that you needed to get to the free throw line that many times.
Well, you're just always worried about being too dependent on free throws because, quite frankly, you're not in control, right? I mean, you can draw up a three-point field goal, you can throw it inside, but you don't know if you're going to get fouled or not. It's not your decision. It's the other guy's, right? You know, that's where it gets a little, you know, you don't want to depend on it. We just try and depend on defense. Just get stops, and hopefully our defense will create some offense. And tonight it did just enough, but I don't think we made enough scoring plays in transition. That's something we really have to clean up.
Well, don't kid yourself. Illinois had, like, house arrest / boots on your automobile type attention to Nebraska's transition. They weren't going to let it happen. Now, and Kent emails in Chris at HaleVarsity.com. Kent's a big-time Nebraska basketball fan. He's nails with this point. Kent's a smart listener. The key to Nebraska here is they had 16 turnovers and the game was never in doubt. How many times has Nebraska urinated on themselves because of turnovers, and it cost them the game, or it made things way tighter than it needed to be? The thing with Palmer, though, yeah, that's always going to be kind of a high-wire act. He said he had 5 turnovers. Good for him. Good on him recognizing it. But he made up for it getting to the line. That's the thing, man. I don't think you're going to be able to ignore Nebraska when they want to get to the line. I think they're that slippery at either getting Cope to the line or Palmer for sure. Who's going to guard him and keep him from getting to the line? Is there, you're going to have to clone Palmer and stick Palmer on Palmer to stop him from getting to the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's a necessity to get to the free throw line, especially in big games. And you mentioned the turnovers. Nebraska can't afford to do that, especially in these road games and bigger games coming up. You can't expect to win with 16 turnovers, especially by double digits. Granted, they played a great game, but you got to get better than that.
Well, you got a slew of Big Ten teams in the top 25. Nebraska into the AP top 25 for the first time since 2014. They come in right in front of Furman. If you had Furman, Danny, we're going to the boats. Maryland's at 23, Ohio State 19, Iowa 18. Tech is in at 13, Wisconsin 12, Sparty at 10, Michigan 5. Michigan's one hell of a basketball team. We'll wind down a Monday with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Want to remind you about Sauter Heyman. Never before has this been going on and talking about once-in-a-lifetime deals with Sauter Heyman. The best, most prestigious jeweler in the area. Now you can save up to 70% on top of their quality jewelry. Top quality jewelry, never before savings, everything in the store. Sauter Heyman's total inventory liquidation sale. Don't wait. Best selections today. SauterHeyman.com. South Point and Grand Island stores only. And while you get there, sign up to win a free $5,000 one-carat diamond pendant. Hey, holiday season's here. It's time to get her something incredible. And 70% off top quality jewelry, never before savings, total inventory liquidation going on with your friends at Sauter Heyman. Grand Island and South Point only. Get there, see Rick, and Santa Rick can help you out. 466-377-6800-825-5865. We'll talk some matchups and some Big Ten perspective tomorrow. Big Ten Buffet, Rick Pizzo is going to join us. We'll run down our dear friend Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com. And Danny, were you wanting to jump on? People are pranking Danny all show long. People are pranking Danny. Unless someone's getting a jump here on the holiday Hail Mary. So was that somebody saying, what caller am I?
Yeah, a little bit quick on the trigger, so. Mm-hmm.
Who was it? Did you get a name?
I didn't get a name.
All right, get a name next time.
Okay.
And it's time to go no soup for you.
Schmitty, we haven't gone over our picks from the weekend. I see you've been ignoring it.
No, I have not. No, you've had this kind of pissy look on your face all show, and maybe it's just Monday, maybe it's me, I don't know. We've had to work six days.
Well, no, you want to know I have a pissy look? Okay, well, first of all, let's just, okay, so we had the same picks except for Georgia, Alabama. I got you there, so we're even on the steak and the beer.
What was the line on that?
It was like 12 and a half.
Okay.
So I had Georgia covering.
My God, it was 12 and a half, wasn't it?
Yeah. It kept moving.
So the point here is we're even now.
Right.
So it's going to be what? Do we have to go into 19 with this thing, or do we need to do a Creighton-Nebraska bet?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll know when the moment's
right.
Why
don't you mull over what we need?
Okay. All right.
Why don't you lay out how smart you are for people?
No, I had one of the most bad luck weekends of all time. I'll say it really quick before we end. So listen to this.
Your Bears?
No, well, yeah, that didn't help. So these three teams screwed me, and I bet a lot more that loss, too. But
Danny Burke's bad beats, everybody.
Listen to this. Three teams heading into the half. Buffalo, 19-point lead. They blow it to NIU. Memphis, 17-point lead against UCF. They blow it and lose. The Pittsburgh Steelers, 16-point lead heading into half, blow the game. That was the most frustrating game I've lost and bet on in my life.
Let's get you a Hail Mary here with Hail Varsity at ESPN. You had a bad one.
Hey! Three-man rush.
Let's just line around!
All kinds of time.
It's the season to be merry. It's
gone. Depths into the throw, in the wind.
Nipply out. I mean nippy out.
Down to the goal line!
Now the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny McKay.
Ho, ho, ho. Touchdown!
Caller 8-9, qualify. Holiday Hail Mary, 800-825-5865-466-3776. We can all shed a tear for Danny Burke. Three bad beats with three double-digit leads. It didn't happen. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 4. Thanks for tuning in with Hail Varsity.